Roman Benkes.
Baiva Benkes.
Riga.
Riga.
Well, my dad worked in a cardboard box factory.
And my parents were, they were kind of language therapists. My mother did some studies in Vienna, and my father was also involved in that. I don't know really where the qualifications came from, but that's what they did.
Yeah, my mother, in her younger days, she worked in a laboratory. So she must have studied that somewhere.
I think people in that part of the world, and they kind of acquired the skills, because I know your mom, she worked in a pharmacy, and she was mixing, concocting the medications, you know. I don't think she ever went to school. She was just trained on the job, and that's what people did. I was a little kid when we left.
Well, I went to the public school, and then that was in Latvia. I completed my Latvian education in Germany in a refugee camp. No, 41st, in July. I left in July. And you too.
We were on the same boat.
We didn't know each other at that time, but when we put it all together, we were on the same ship leaving Latvia for Germany. I was 12.
I was 4.
Yeah, so it was fun, you know. At that time, it was very exciting, you know. No, really, you know.
Yeah. Do you remember the name of the boat?
The Monte Rosa. That was actually one of the first ships leaving for Germany with refugees. The big push came later. We were probably the first or the second boat leaving. Okay. My mother thought it was, you know, it's going to be a visit. You see, going back into history, my mother's sister was married to a man of a German ancestry, although he was 100% Latvian. He fought in the liberation for Latvia. And then in 1941, when the Germany made the pact with the Soviet Union, the people of German ancestry could go to Germany. So my aunt and uncle and their son left Latvia in March 1941 and moved to Germany. Now in 44, in the early days of the refugee business, my mom thought that, well, this will be a good, you know, the war is coming, but this might be a good chance to go and visit her sister. we were hoping it isn't permanent. You know? Yeah. We went to Hanover, and unlike most of the Latvians, the refugees who went to Germany later, they were housed in camps. Well, we were living privately with my aunt and uncle, you know, among the German population. So my mom didn't work at all then, and my father, he was from Latvia. He was sent to, during the German occupation, he was sent to Belarus, to Minsk. He was managing a plant there. And then when the Germans started losing the war, they moved him to Saxony in Germany to work in another plant. So he was there. It looked like the other end of the world when we were there, you know, but today Europe is not all that big, you know. He came to visit us a couple of times in Saxony, but he had to go back. And then when Saxony was occupied by the Russians, then he moved over to Hanover with us.
But I remember that when we landed in East Germany, mm-hmm. there was never any, and then the Russians came in. There was never any discussion of any kind, because that was too dangerous, because you'd be, you know, if you were in school, you'd be questioned. Huh? My parents, extraordinary people, We never complained about anything. And those discussions, I don't think there were any at that point. Well, we couldn't get out because my father was an invalid from the First World War. So we did not get out of East Germany. We were living privately, a Germanic last name, so that tidied us over. Trautmann, Trautmanis. So we survived quite a while there in East Germany. But my aunt was with us. And she spoke about seven languages, and so she was engaged with the occupying government. But they knew that she was from Latvia, so that was three strokes against her. So finally, she was deported to Siberia. Yeah, well, anybody with any education in Latvia spoke at least Russian and German.
Well, my parents too. Everybody spoke three languages, and that was normal.
How did they know that that Fried was from?
Well, I don't know, but they knew.
Because her last name was Trautmann too.
No. Her last name is Laue. Because she was my dad's half sister. She was older than my dad. About 4 or 5 years old. No, after the war, there was very few people were employed. I mean, you just somehow, you know, I don't know. I mean, they just went out and they tried to find some food somewhere. It was starvation level.
No, that's in East Germany. We were in a different situation.
And in East Germany, I mean, that was starvation. Personally, I still haven't recovered from my addiction to bread. It was from there, because that was the only food in East Germany. Well, we were there until 1948,
and then when my
aunt was taken away. They came and questioned my parents, and my parents pretended.
The Russians came and questioned.
My mother did a stint in some kind of interrogation at some place. And you see, now it would be all very interesting to know, but afterwards. The undercurrent of fear, and I never asked her, and she never told. Finally, they released her, and that's an interesting story. They released her in the middle of the night, and she was sick, and she was lying in the street, and a car came by, driven by a friend of the family who happened to be a doctor. And that's why I'm here. He was a doctor, you see, this is why he was allowed to drive a car. And he was going to see some patients, so he picked... Well, the Russians also came to interrogate my mother and my father, and they pretended that they don't understand Russian. They were going to put me in some kind of orphanage and send them away somewhere to Siberia. So they decided, well, whatever, they have to go, and my father didn't want to go. He said, I'm just going to stay here because he's an invalid. And my mother said, well, I'm not leaving without you, so you have to come along. So we went to Berlin, and from there, eventually some Quaker ladies took us across. This is before the wall came up, you see. And that, again, was because you have to go through Russian checkpoints. And if they found that we are Latvians, they could just... But the Quaker ladies were quite extraordinary. This one just put on some lipstick and did her thing, and the Russian... And then, oh, yeah, she just drove through. And my father said afterwards, are they going to shoot us or what? But they didn't.
I had a brother, but he was killed in Ottawa in a train car collision.
And when we came to the west to Hanover also, then there was the The Latvians were quite extraordinary in the sense that, you know, you talk about refugee camps. The first thing they did was establish schools for the kids. Mm-hmm.
ACCU, A-C-C-U. That's where we met.
That was, I think, grade... I don't know. It was grade 2 or 3 or something like that.
Well, I completed grade 7, and then I did 2 years in high school. I didn't like high school, and I went to Flensburg in northern Germany. I went to a navigation school. No, for sea. I got my certificate as third mate. Pardon going, but I never went to sea.
Approximately 30 or 40 kids there? Oh, there were a few trinkets and things like that.
You have the story that you told me about being at the train station. That your mom ran into a friend, or they had to switch clothes.
Yes.
That's important.
That was because when it was decided that we have to leave Latvia, we were in the summer at the beach,
no,
and
no.
my mother met a friend of hers, and she had come to say goodbye, mm-hmm. and. She said, "You cannot go, you a refugee, in that dress." So on the train station, she pulled off the dress she was wearing, and she said, "You give me your dress." So they did that on the station platform, and nobody batted an eye. Just a more solid dress, from what I understand.
Right.
I mean, because she was like in a, you know, like a beach dress. And she also gave her a ring with a ruby and 2 diamonds, and she said, you know, you might need this. And this same friend, when my aunt was in Siberia, she went to see her. She was for several years in the gulag there, and she spent, I don't know, everything that she had to go and see her for 10 minutes through those wire fences. That's the kind of friends my parents had. After Stalin's death, we did receive news of her, and she eventually, because of her health, she was sent back to Riga. But then, of course,
well, there again, my aunt and uncle, they had a relative who had come to Canada as a laborer to work for the Ontario Hydro building, the power plant at Petawawa in Ontario. So he sponsored my aunt and uncle to come to Canada. And as soon as they got here, they sponsored us. And so we came to Ottawa.
Bremerhaven.
Oh, Bremerhaven.
What was the name of the boat?
Goya. G-O-Y-A. On Christmas Eve, 1950. And I arrived in Halifax on 5th of January. Well, it was... We landed in Halifax, and then we took a train to Montreal from there. And it was all snowy and cold, and the first thing was, it looked like out of a Wild West movie, those Coca-Cola signs, you know, as the train was passing through the small villages. And then when we entered the St. Lawrence Valley, it was just after Christmas, and the both sides of the valley was still lit up with Christmas lights, so it was quite a sight. Yeah. My parents were divorced in Germany. Yeah. My father moved to England. He remarried there, and my mom and my brother and I, we came to Ottawa, got a job, and started working for a moving company. In the garage as an apprentice, learned auto mechanics, and during busy season, I drove transport for them across Canada. And then 5 years later, I started in at university, Carleton in Ottawa, in geology.
Well, he was working at night in the garage, and in the daytime he went to university.
I went to work for a bus company, And I worked 2 weeks. I worked from midnight to 8 o'clock, and 2 weeks I worked from 4 p.m. till midnight. 1962.
Canada wouldn't accept at those days invalids, so we were. We went to the United States, and some friends of my mother's from Vienna put up a $1,000 guarantee that we would not be a burden on the state. And we never were. And at the end of 10 years, they got their $1,000 back. Now, in 1950, $1,000, that would be equivalent. New York City.
In the Bronx.
Well, first in Brooklyn and then Long Island and then the Bronx. There were quite a few Latvians there. In New York, that there was a whole bunch there. There right away they had, as I remember, there were two Lutheran congregations. And of course, right away, Latvian school and Latvian Sunday school and so forth. Yeah. I mean, my mother and father could have worked in their profession in Germany, but they, you know, have to get away from the communists because everybody was so traumatized, you didn't want to stay in Europe. And said they didn't want me to go to a German school. I went to New York, and my mother did all kinds of. In New York, many of the Latvians became janitors, called superintendents, and lived in the Bronx in a basement. And my mother and I shoveled coal and heated the house and did the best I could. And when the few boyfriends I had, amongst them Roland, if they came, they had to help do fixtures and things like that, because my father couldn't do it, because there was no elevator in the house. 51 to 61, 10 years. And then I married into Canada and came to Ottawa.
Well, during the summer, there wasn't much to do in New York. For a little girl, and we were living in Ottawa on the, well, right now it's the city proper, but we were in the early 50s, we were on the outskirts of Ottawa in a place called Britannia Bay, which was practically out in the country. So my mom and her mom agreed that Bible come and spend the summer with us.
You have to go
us.
Back and but where did your...
Well, they were in the they worked in the kitchen in the refugee camp.
In Aku camp.
And they became very good friends.
She came to Ottawa one summer, and she was dating my brother. Andres.
Well, by the second... He seemed a little bit too juvenile for me because he was only 1 year older.
And then the same summer, unfortunately, my brother was killed. Oh, he was still going to high school. He was only 16 and he was killed.
I really don't remember, but having already changed languages several times. Always being new, never knowing the language, the concern was, am I going to kind of fit in? I was also in teaching and so on, and the problem. One of the marvelous things was everybody was very, very kind. I never, me with my pigtails, nobody had pigtails. And my pigtails, this fine fluffy hair, it never occurred to me. I felt awkward about it, but in those days, what parents had gone through, you never whine or ask for anything. I think it was absolutely stupendous that nobody ever said an unkind word to me. None of the kids, ever. Yeah. The obligation. I knew what my parents had kind of sacrificed for me, and I worked very, very hard. And,
And all the Latvians worked very hard, and we all went to university, and because that was the thing to do. You know, it was a matter of
course. That was the Latvian thing. I don't know of any Latvian who came in the during the refugee years who came to North America who didn't go to university. That was sort of a progression. So, of course, I didn't have any money, so I had to earn money while I was going to university.
Well, I was fortunate. I was at City College, and that was, if you know the American system, it was State of New York had the regents exams. In those days, the top-notch education came from the states that had the regents exams, you see. Here they go on about exams being useless. Well, when you don't have exams, you don't have the standards. And New York was one of the states that had and I got into that took me to City College, which was practically free for me. Now I think it's called the City University of New York, but it has totally changed its criteria since then. I took French, of all things. I majored in French, yes. I did my bachelor's degree in French. I took a minor in Russian. It was interesting. In those days, you just had to have a diploma, which meant that you're able to learn some. And I forget what company it was and how I got in touch with them, and I had a minor in Russian. They said, "You come and work for us." I said, "But I really don't know Russian that well." "That doesn't matter. You know some." You know? At that time, I was already planning to come to Canada because all the guys studied engineering and all the girls studied either biology or chemistry, and I was the only one who studied French. And I came from a family, you know, that was really disadvantaged. All my girlfriends, they had these fathers who were living, on the construction jobs. They were doing the roofs, and they were earning $30 a day. And that was such a princely sum. And my father, of course, couldn't do anything. My mother was scrabbling along, you know, trying to maintain this superintendent job, and then she went out and she worked in the factory, and I studied such a luxury subject as French, you know. Mm-hmm. My parents were totally, and then I came to Canada, and then Carleton University gave me a fellowship in French, so I continued for my MA in French. Got married at Christmas. I wrote one of my finals in the morning, and we got married in the afternoon. I came back and I continued my studies in New York. Roland went back to Ottawa.
And then she came to see us at Easter. And in Canada, we finished our academic year sooner than in New York. So I finished my year at Carleton, and I took a job with New Jersey Zinc Company, and I went to Northern Quebec working on exploration. So I didn't see my new wife until the following fall.
In Ottawa.
You lived in Ottawa?
Renting space in a private house, you know, like a top floor of one. Well, I just graduated and just got my first job, getting my feet wet, you know, and really didn't think too much about where we're going to end up until we were established in
geology. Ottawa isn't the place. Yeah. But I finished my MA, and I worked. Fellowship meant that I had to teach also, you see. They gave me some money, and the courses were free, and I had to do some teaching while I was studying.
And did you speak Latvian together?
Oh, yes.
Well, most of the time.
I would say primary language.
Yeah, Latvian, but I think I really don't remember.
Latvian was my first language.
Yes,
then
was.
Then French, then English.
Yeah, but
when Laura came to Calgary, she didn't speak a word of English. Yes. She spoke Latvian and French.
I was just so immersed in my studies. All my Latvian reading and so on. I was a great bookworm. And when we first came to New York, and we went to church every Sunday so that I could buy a new book, you see. But they weren't really children's books. I mean, I was raised on adult books.
Well, there were about 200 people, 200 Latvians at that time. Now there's a lot more there, but...
You think there are more there now?
Oh, yeah. The first year, the first few years, when we were all about in the same situation, with the same kind of background, so we really did stick together. There were relatively few people who were at the point where they could afford a car, so... So during the summer on Sunday, the people with the cars gathered all the other Latvians, and we went out to Shirley Bay for Sunday picnic every weekend. And then as time went by, people established, they got financially were better situated, and they sort of became more individualistic again. Mm-hmm. But the first few years, we were really mixing.
When we go out in the summer, we go out to Bragg Creek. And there you see these ethnic groups, these big groups. We watch them a little bit, and there was a kind of a little bit of an envy, with that togetherness.
Mm-hmm. Well, first time I came here was in 1969. I had a job with Rio Algo Mines in Toronto, and they doing exploration all over Canada and the United States. And I decided to go into coal exploration, so they made me the chief coal man and geologist special project. I was in charge of exploration along the foothills from way north of Hinton to the Montana border in BC. 2 years, did some coal exploration. I had about 15 students working for me. I had a helicopter. I had half a dozen bulldozers tearing. Came out here during the summer. And then the coal exploration sort of died down. I was working elsewhere in North America for the company. And then in 1978, the company transferred me to Quebec City, put me in charge of everything they were doing in Quebec. Quebec City is not like anything else in Quebec. So after a while, I wanted to get out of there because there was really no reason for me to be in Quebec City yet, other than showing the flag. But the company didn't want... I wanted to get out, and the company didn't want to let me go. They wanted me to stay in Quebec, so I said, okay, so I'll move myself. I took a job as a chief geologist for Monenco here in Calgary. I came to Calgary. I've been here now for 30 years.
Well, I mean, when we went to Quebec, then I left left my job. I became really a camp follower, kind of. I was teaching English in Quebec. That's big business. At Laval and various other places. I teach at Mount Royal? Was it English or French? I can't remember which one. I did the teaching French, I believe. Yes, I was teaching French at Mount. And then I was teaching French, and I was teaching French to the civil servants and things like that. Recycled myself and became a substitute teacher.
living in Lake Bonavista.
There really wasn't, as far as we were concerned, much of a community
after
here.
Toronto.
So yeah. It was really
sparse.
That's the word, sparse. And it was the community where those people who had, or the descendants of those who had come in the beginning of the century. So they seemed a little bit, you know, we had a rather astonished view of them. They just, you see,
when we're old.
When Latvians, you feel that, like in the beginning, when Roland was saying, you know, how they went on picnic, people who have a certain background, you don't have to talk about the background, but there's a connection. If we met up, for example, like we're in the new territories in China, you know, if you and I met up, we would be such bosom pals because we have all this Canadian connection. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's analogous to that. But we came here, and these people, they spoke the language, but it's as if they were from another world. See?
Not quite that, but no.
The
biggest difference was that, you see, when Latvians were coming into Canada in the 1950s, and then some settled in Ottawa, some in Toronto, and there was a group that settled here in Alberta, in Edmonton, Calgary, and they became sort of a closed community. They became friends, they were friends among themselves. Well, we were in the Toronto environment. Now, when we came here in 1980, all these people, they knew the Latvian community was rather small in Calgary. At that time, it was less than 200 people. But for the past 30 years, they had known each other. They'd been together. And all of a sudden, we were total strangers to them, you know. So it was quite a change coming from Eastern Canada, from where the Latvian community was so active, coming here, sort of cut off from everybody. And
well, I don't know whether anybody who has lived in so many places, so many backgrounds, that they can really become integrated in the deep emotional sense. Mm-hmm. And yet, we are probably more Canadian than a lot of Canadians because we appreciate where we are living.
Well, I wasn't born here. Can I say that I'm really a Canadian? I don't know. You know, I spend my life and time here. I paid my taxes. I've had a good life here. And at the same time, if we went back to Latvia now, we wouldn't fit in there because those people, they have had, for the last 60 years, they have had totally different experience than we have. Mm-hmm. So we are somewhere in between. Well, when I worked for Monenko here, most of my work was international. I worked, traveled all over the world. Well, I was a Canadian everywhere. You know, it was no question about it. That was, you know, and how I presented myself.
But, Mom, you also have a real affinity with the, you know, and a real place in your heart for the Americans for taking you in.
Yes. So I'm,
she's American too.
They were the only ones who accepted us. They're the ones who gave me an education. And most of the world would give an arm and a leg to live in the United States. They also have given so much to the world, and yet it's not appreciated. You know? So it's
okay. Who also happens to have a Latvian passport?
Kind of reluctant because I would want to go back. Sort of retrace my childhood, which is impossible. You know, the Latvia that exists today is nothing like the Latvia that was when I left it. You know, so if I'm thinking I'm a little afraid that if I go back there, I'll be very, very much disappointed with what I see.
Yeah, how about you? Do you want to go back?
Not particularly. I mean, it would be perhaps interesting, but I'm not really that keen on it. It would be an adventure.
Yeah, I was the president of the community here. Oh, I don't know how many years. Quite a few. And nothing was happening here, really. People didn't have that much interest. We got together twice a year for our national day on the 18th of November, and then
but it was kind of, you know, and when we came here, there weren't others there, and in relation to us, they were also older than we were, you know, so.
And the children here, their children who had grown up here, so the Latvian community here was small compared to Toronto. In Toronto, we had schools, we had Boy Scouts, we had Girl Guides, we had dance troops and sports teams, and we could live in Latvia.
I've been back twice, and each time I think that.
But you have no preconceived idea about Latvia the way I do.
But it's important for me, because in the last 5 years, this is I I'm sort of faced with the fact that they're eventually not going to be here, and I need a connection to some place.
For example, when we went, you know, just the experiences of childhood. Somebody was telling me. After what happened in the Russian zone, there was this undercurrent of anxiety, which just disappeared after I got married to Roland somehow. I had nightmares about those things. And when we did get to West Germany, I really didn't speak Latvian, because we couldn't speak Latvian in East Germany. You know, you'd be taken away right away. And always a change in language and so on. So one becomes kind of inured, you know. I'm really not part of it. And I think that that most immigrants feel that on some level. We hardly speak any Latvian at home. Huh? I think at this point we really don't have much of a, you know. I'm a Calgarian, I'm a Canadian. But watching the ethnic communities, there's, for example, I mean, I don't know my neighbors across the street. What kind of community are we living in? Well, it was interesting in Toronto. My neighbors were quite envious. we were all in the same age or having children. So in summer, Laura's brother was sent to camp and so on. The summer camps and all the activities that we had, and the neighbors expressed a certain envy of this.
What's your hope for the next generation? Culturally, what's your hope?
I have a hope for the world. I don't have a hope for the Latvian generation. I just have a hope for the world.
I think there's a purity to the language that because so much has been, with the advent of technology and with the fall of the Soviet Union, things have, you know, capitalism has crept, you know, has come in and has sort of.
But that's a normal development of language. When you go into Latvian language, you can say, I knew some Russian. I mean, this is a Russian derivative, and this is a German derivative. You know, so that happens to all languages.
Well. Language is something that is constantly evolving. My Latvian stopped when I left Latvia. Everything new, new concepts, new ideas, everything new that's come into my life has come in either through German or through English language. So my Latvian language stopped in 1944. And meanwhile, the language has grown, all these new ideas, new concepts. They have words for them that I don't know. Well, in just a simple thing like a geology. There's a geologist in Latvia, and I'm a geologist here in Canada.
Geological terms, I really don't know what they use them in Latvia, although we are in the same profession, you know.
I thought it was lovely. I mean, I thought it was great, but it's such a disappointment, you know. Corruption like anywhere else, you see. The generation I still remember, I had...
They follow that. Every day or every second day, I look up on the internet, the Latvian newspapers, what's going on in Latvia. But other than that, we're...
If I ask each of you, I'm going to ask you first, Laura, what's a symbol of Latvia for you?
The music. There's nothing, I don't think, anywhere else. I went for the Song Festival in 2008, and we have 60,000 people in one open air
stadium
that are singing together. There's absolutely nothing like it. I think Latvia is the only country that where the Song Festival has a UNESCO designation, which is it's an intangible contribution to humanity or something like that.
No, that was extraordinary when I saw the tape.
And the choir is 12,000 people, and it's
all trained, beautiful voices,
and they all come together every 5 years to do this. And it's so big to put on, but I don't think there's any other place where the music is as such a integrated part.
If you can pick one thing, I mean, you were little when you left, but if you think of one
thing. Well, I must say, in spite of the later the loss and the later acquisition, I think there's a language. Every language can express certain things that another language can't express. I'm very much aware of that. And there is a softness and gentleness and a nuance in the language because of the structure of the language that I find. And I find it very sad that I can't read to my grandson in Latvian.
Are you, Roland? What's the symbol?
My childhood and my youth. The best years of my life was spent in talking Latvian and in the Latvian communities. You know. That's who I am. Just that who I am. And I was born there, and, well, though they're my people, and the ones who are losing interest are... what I started saying before, a small group of Latvians in a place like Calgary, they had children. In Toronto, the Latvian group was much bigger. So as the children grew up and became adults, they fell in love and they got married, and a lot of that happened within the Latvian community, whereas here that wasn't possible. The pool was so small, so the children of the people who had settled here married outside the Latvian community, and that sort of killed the thing here. The older generation, they became disinterested in or incapable to attending the function, and the younger, well, they were living a different life.